Good afternoon. This is Chair Ruth Richardson, and pursuant to House Rule 10.1, I call this remote meeting of the Education Policy Committee to order. The clerk will take the roll for attendance.
Chair Richardson?
Present.
Vice Chair Hassan?
Present.
Representative Erickson?
Present.
Representative Drazkowski? Representative Drazkowski? Representative Bennett? Representative Bennett?
I think she's running a few minutes late from another meeting.
Yes, I agree.
All right, thanks. Representative Berg?
Present.
Representative Bowe?
Present.
Representative Christensen?
Present.
Representative Edelson?
Present.
Representative Feist?
Present.
Representative Frazier?
Present.
Representative Jordan?
Present.
Representative Keeler?
Present.
Representative Moeller?
Present.
Representative Mueller?
Present.
Representative Poston?
Present.
Representative Scott? Representative Scott? Representative Erdahl?
Present.
Representative Waslowick?
Present.
Representative Drazkowski? Representative Scott? Representative Scott?
I think she's still in another meeting.
All right, Madam
here.
Chair.
Every spot, Representative Scott's here.
Thank you. Madam Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. Representative Bowe, have you had an opportunity to review our minutes from February 22nd? Not hearing from Representative Bowe. Representative Waslowick, have you had a moment to review those minutes?
Yes, Madam Chair, and I would move approval of the minutes.
Thank you, Representative Waslowick. Any discussion of that motion? All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? The minutes are approved. Members, I will move my bill, House File 950, to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus. I also have an author's amendment, which I would like to move to get the bill in the shape that I would like. Mr. Uni, can you speak to the amendment briefly?
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Adosh Uni. I'm the Director of Government Relations for the department, and thank you for the opportunity to just briefly discuss this amendment to the bill. This is just a cleanup amendment, and the first section is replicating Section 3, Article 1 of the bill around credits in the standards. Subdivision 2 on page 2, starting at line 2.8, is just making a technical clarification around the fact that the CTE credit can fulfill the Earth and Space Science credit that with a corresponding change up in the first subdivision. In the second, in the line 2.32, we're making a change to later on line 70 or page 72, line 20 of the underlying bill around who it can access the ECFE programs and changing it from non-custodial providers to allo parents. And then on page 74, line 21 to 26, we're reinstating stricken language that was inadvertently removed during the drafting process around notification to students about PSEO opportunities. And that concludes the amendment, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I move the A21-0033 amendment be adopted. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? The amendment is adopted. Members, I'll ask that you please hold all questions to the end. We'll have MDE do a walkthrough presentation of their bill. Then we will go to public testimony and then move on to member questions. So with that, I will turn it over to MDE for the walkthrough. And I believe Deputy Commissioner Mueller, you may be kicking us off, or let us know if it's someone else.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. It is me who is starting it off. Thank you. My name is Heather Mueller. I'm the Deputy Commissioner with the Department of Education, and we appreciate, Madam Chair and committee members, the opportunity to come and talk to you and highlight our policy bill. And so the first thing that we want to talk about is specifically looking at through the Due North Education Plan and the policy recommendations is first looking first and foremost at our commitments to equity and recognizing that in everything that we do and in every place that we start, we are moving forward with recognizing that first and foremost, we must center our students and center exactly who they are and what they bring with them every single day. Considerations for their race, considerations for their sexuality and their gender, considerations for their ethnicity and abilities, and recognizing that what we do every single day is paramount to our students and to their families. And so we begin with equity in the work that we do. As we look at our policy overviews, we have several that we want to be able to highlight specifically in looking at cultural responsibility and inclusivity, American Indian education, supporting educators and growing educators, and also our school environment. So as we think first and foremost about our culturally inclusive and diverse and respectful schools, we know that we need to increase our teachers of color and American Indian teachers by at least 2 percentage points every single year. And our goal is by 2041 to match the diversity of the state to the diversity of our students and staff in our schools and in our buildings. We know that this also aligns with the Tokait Coalition, and that it has been done in collaboration and in partnership with their work. And so that is a really important piece, because we know that having students have their teachers reflect who they are is incredibly important. And we also know that for our students, our white students, that they need to also have access to our educators of color. And so this is an incredibly important piece that we want to be able to continue to move forward. Also modifying the range of statutes to make our Minnesota schools more culturally responsive and inclusive, and our respectful environments for our students, our staff, our families, and our communities. As our schools are community hubs and hubs for our students and staff, we know that we need to be able to help to support that we, all students, and recognize their diverse backgrounds and recognize their diverse abilities and ensure that we are able to meet their needs. And so this gives us the opportunity to really be thoughtful about things like including cultural responsiveness as part of our teacher development and evaluation programs. It gives us the opportunity to require district advisory committees to ensure that the curricular resources and the learning and the work environments that we have in our districts are inclusive and are respectful of all of our racial and ethnic groups. And so those are very specific things we've identified in our policy bills, as well as identifying a respectful lunch policy, knowing that shaming students for not having funding for lunch is not something that has ever really been tolerated in the state of Minnesota, and to ensure that that is something that we have in our policy. As we look to supporting our American Indian education, we know that we have to do several pieces. First is eliminate the word supplemental from the American Indian instruction statutes. By eliminating the word supplemental from the American Indian instructional statutes, the governor's policy proposal indicates that we want to produce students who are not only aware of the history of the land that they occupy, but also the history of our Native people and Indigenous people who were here before the Europeans, the history and the culture of our Indigenous populations, and specifically our Native to Minnesotans, and are still with us today. So looking not only at our historical contributions, but also contemporary contributions. Looking at providing tribal nations access to data on their students, It gives opportunity to list the entities that can access education data so that our tribal nations can have the access to the data to support their students and make decisions about priority services. Also, the ability to count the American Indian student for the purposes of American Indian Education Aid as a state count. We know that the state counts American Indian students more accurately reflects our student population when it's compared to the federal definition. And so the federal definition excludes individuals who identify as two or more races or ethnicities. And so anecdotally and based on experience from other states, the federal count misses approximately 30% of our students who identify at least in part as American Indian. The final two are really focused specifically on looking at our American Indian Parent Advisory Committee, and that is one to ensure that our districts, especially who are receiving American Indian Education Aid, have American Indian Parent Advisory Committees, and those committees are made up of a majority of American Indian parents and of American Indian students. And finally, our educators. Looking at removing the basic skills test from teacher licensure and eliminating the 3 years of teaching experience required under a tier two license as a pathway to a tier three. What we know is that the basic skills test in a variety of forms, we really need to be thoughtful about recognizing that we are not saying that we do not want our educators to be highly qualified and highly skilled. What we are saying is the way that we are able to assess and determine that movement forward for our educators does need to shift, because it doesn't reflect the competencies of an educator. Also, eliminating the prohibition on tier one teachers from joining a bargaining unit, and add early childhood family education and adult basic education teachers to union membership. And finally, prohibiting the discipline of a teacher for incorporating lessons on the contributions of protected classes into their curricula. And with that, I'm going to pass it over to my colleague, Assistant Commissioner Darren Cordy.
Sorry, Assistant Commissioner Cordy.
Thank you. So I'm going to talk about some of the proposals that we have around supporting non-exclusionary discipline practices. In the most recent data that we have, Minnesota school students missed about 100,000 days of school because of exclusionary discipline. Of those 100,000 or so days missed, students with disabilities received 39% of those days missed, despite being only 16% of the student population. Black students received 37% of those disciplinary actions, despite being only 9.2% of the student population. And Hispanic students received 10.8% of all discipline actions, despite being only 4.7% of the population. So if we know that we have vast opportunity and achievement gaps between students of color, indigenous students, students with disabilities versus their non-disabled white peers, and we know that black students, Hispanic students, indigenous students, and students with disabilities are excluded from the classroom at vastly disproportionate rates, it seems like common sense that if we can reduce even by a fraction some of those 100,000 plus days of school that our students are kept out of the classroom, we might be able to make some progress on the achievement gap. So what we have is a proposal that defines a number of terms that are in statute currently for clarity and consistency. And this is consistent with some of the work that the Department of Human Rights is doing with school districts around discipline, and including aligning the definition of suspension. We also would require that non-exclusionary discipline policies and practices be used before a pupil withdrawal proceeding begins. That is not to say that a student couldn't be excluded or removed from the classroom if there is an immediate danger to the student or others or property nearby. And the last piece of the proposal is requiring some additional reporting to MDE. One piece of data that we do not have is around something called pupil withdrawal agreements. And this would be a situation where a student and their family and the district all mutually agreed that the student would withdraw from enrollment at the school in hopes of avoiding an expulsion hearing. And so this would just require that when those agreements are made, that they would be reported to MDE so that we know how often and where this is happening. The next piece is about supporting restorative practices. Restorative practices focus on repairing harm and relationship building. And we're not mandating the use of restorative practices here. That would actually be counter to the principle of restorative practices, but it requires parties to voluntarily come to the table, engage in restorative practices with a high level of commitment to fidelity and implementation. There are some statutory changes that we have that are more technical in nature that we are suggesting to allow these practices to take root in districts that choose to implement them. And then it also asks districts to revise their discipline policies annually to further support restorative practices. And the last piece that I'd like to touch on is about reducing the use of restrictive procedures. Like discipline, the use of restrictive procedures is extremely disproportionate against students of color. And right now, the statutes are only the requirements around restrictive procedures and the procedural safeguards and training that is required to use restrictive procedures on students. And so when we say restrictive procedures, we mean physical holds as well as seclusion. Then in order to use those for students with disabilities, there's a certain amount of training and procedural safeguards that have to be in place before they can be used, as well as debriefing that happens after they are used. The statute is not clear whether or not those requirements are for all students or just students with disabilities. And so therefore we wanted to make sure that if restrictive procedures are being used on students who are not disabled, that those same requirements would apply as well. And then lastly, it also prohibits the use of prone restraint for all students. And prone restraint is already something that's prohibited under our statutes, but it's not clear how it applies to people like school resource officers or other people who may be in the school building, such as security staff, who are not perhaps employed by the district directly or through a contracted situation. So it would just be clear that prone restraint cannot be used by anyone who's in the school building. And then also it bans the use of restrictive procedures on children who are under the age of 5. And with that, I will hand it over to Assistant Commissioner Bobby Burnham.
Thank you, Assistant Commissioner Corte. Assistant Commissioner Burnham.
Thank you, Chair Richardson, committee members. I'm going to be speaking with you this afternoon around our proposals that involve school environment, creating safe, healthy, and welcoming schools. And the first piece of that proposal includes the need to address the mental health instruction in our schools. So currently, Statute 12OB0B.21 encourages schools to provide mental health instruction for students in grades 6 through 12. This proposal would amend that statute to require schools to provide mental health instruction. Currently, there are only a few evidence-based student mental health curriculums that exist. So ideally, this instruction would be aligned with local health education standards and integrated into existing programs, curriculum, or the general school environment of a district or charter school. The second component is social-emotional learning standards. Currently, Minnesota does not have social-emotional learning standards. However, Minnesota Statute 121A.031 requires districts and schools to establish strategies for creating a positive school climate and use evidence-based social-emotional learning to prevent bullying, harassment, and discrimination. So in response to this requirement, MDE developed voluntary K through 12 social emotional learning competencies, learning goals, benchmarks, sample activities, and related academic standards by grade band. This proposal would establish SEL standards for Minnesota. This would also be implemented through a social emotional learning implementation guidebook that MDE has developed. This guidance is designed to provide schools with guidance and resources to help schools integrate social emotional learning into school-wide teaching and learning practices so that students will learn, practice, and model essential personal life skills that contribute to academic, vocational, and personal success. Integrating social emotional learning into school helps students learn to be caring and civil, make healthy decisions, problem solve effectively, value excellence, be respectful and responsible, be good citizens, and be empathetic and ethical individuals. The third component of our proposal is around defining comprehensive school mental health systems. There is growing research to show the impact and value of providing mental health supports and services in schools. Comprehensive school mental health systems address the full array of these services and supports, including mental health promotion, prevention, early identification, and treatment. Comprehensive school mental health systems is not currently defined in Minnesota statute. Currently, there is fragmentation and a lack of implementation guidelines for comprehensive mental health support systems in schools across the state of Minnesota. It is necessary to define in order to align with related legislation and state statute, such as positive behavior interventions and supports, otherwise known as PBIS, social emotional learning, SEL, and school-linked mental health grant programs and proposed multi-tiered systems of support. Which brings us to our fourth component, which is defining multi-tiered systems of support, which is a school reform model that involves new ways of thinking and doing business with the aim of organizing how schools support every student in a systematic and equitable manner. It is a whole school, data-driven, prevention-based framework designed to improve learning outcomes for every student through a later continuum of evidence-based practices and supports. Multi-tiered systems of supports supports the whole child by addressing academics, social emotional behavior, behavioral functioning, and beyond, and ensures that supports are not denied or delayed while the team waits for a child's evaluation. So MTSS is a non-prescriptive framework for efficiently organizing and distributing educational and district resources to meet the wide range of student needs within the school or district. This framework has been overwhelmingly supported by research for decades, and many states have embraced it with notable success. And with that is our closing slide. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And I'll just remind testifiers that we have you to present and testify for up to 2 minutes, and staff will give a 30-second warning before time is up. We have a number of testifiers, so we're going to stay on track as best as we can here. And so with that, I will let you know who is up to testify and who's on deck. Our first testifier is going
Madam Chair.
I'm sorry. Mr. Rooney.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I apologize for the confusion. If the committee would like, Madam Chair, or if you would like, the department would be happy to walk through the bill section by section. We're happy to do it if you'd like to do that. We're prepared to, but if you see fit to move to testimony and to allow more time for that and for member questions, we're happy to do that as well.
Mr. Uni, yes. Would you be walking us through, or will some? Okay, please proceed.
Yeah, Madam Chair. Again, my apologies for the confusion, and appreciate the opportunity to present the bill section by section. Again, my name is Adosh Uni. I'm the Director of Government Relations for the Department of Education. Myself and Assistant Commissioner Corte will be walking through the bill sections, and we'll just pass it off to each other. We'll be doing it article by article, not to create too much back and forth over Zoom. So again, really appreciate you indulging the department and being able to walk through the sections of the bill item by item. So on Article 1, which is titled General Education, Section 1 amends the ART standards and requires districts to use the state standards rather than local standards, and this updates the statute to reflect five arts areas: dance, media arts, music, theater, and visual arts, and it adds media arts into the statute. In section two, this makes clear that we have specific, we believe, the department believes that there is specific legislative authorization to conduct rulemaking around review and revision of our academic standards. But we just want to make it clear that we have specific legislative authorization to amend rules on our standards on a 10-year ruling basis. And so we're just putting that into statute as well. In section three, and this was subject to the amendment, the first section of the amendment, this clarifies several graduation requirements, namely that an eighth grade Algebra 1 credit is not a high school credit, clarifies that a course that meets earth and space science standards is a non-elective credit required beginning in ninth grade of the 23-24 year, and clarifies the existing physical education standards are met with a credit under to meet graduation requirements. Additionally, from the amendment, it just makes clarifying changes around CTE courses being able to satisfy the earth and space course. In section four, this creates eliminates the requirement to do above grade and below grade questions in the MCA exams. That's our Minnesota Comprehensive Assessments. And these are questions that are not, do not serve a purpose and really just kind of satisfy language that stayed in statute. And so this would remove the requirement to have those questions and thereby decrease test lengths. Section five will provide state flexibility in administering statewide assessments while also protecting student data privacy. So this would give direction to the department to create guidelines, security and privacy policies and procedures for students and educators to support remote testing in the future. In section six, this updates the definitions of supplements the definitions of blended learning, online learning, and digital learning by providing a statutory definition of hybrid learning. It's blended learning in a way that combines scheduled in-person instruction and distance learning. Section seven modifies the MDE's requirement to provide technical assistance to include providing an annual report of American Indian student data using the state count of American Indian students. Section eight codifies in another section of statute the use of the state count of American Indian students. And section nine provides an extension for the commissioner and the department to post progress data to the department's website to October 1st, 2021 of the next school or for this current school year instead of September 1. And this really accounts for the pushing back of the access testing window that occurred roughly around a month ago. That concludes Article 1 on general education. Madam Chair, I can proceed through the rest of the walkthrough unless you want to hold for questions. I'm happy to do whatever you feel is fit.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, committee members, Article 2, Education Excellence. This section adds tribal nations to the list of entities that may access educational data for the purposes of which it may share, it states that the tribal nation can access this data to the extent necessary to support educational attainment of the students in question. Section two eliminates obsolete language under compulsory instruction. That would waive an annual testing requirement if instructors in unaccredited schools have passed a teacher competency exam. Section three adds accountability to homeschooling education providers by requiring parents to submit test scores and proof that the necessary assessments were administered for the correct school year. Section four amends the gifted and talented statute by adding and services to the program's identification throughout. And also makes changes to testing administration intended to make these programs and services available to students in a more equitable fashion. This is going to really increase access to gifted and talented programs and services. And then section five codifies a requirement by the Federal Every Student Succeeds Act that state education agencies and districts and charters who receive Title I funds to participate, if they are selected in the National Association of Education Programs. This change will require Minnesota's participation in NAEP, as it's called, and it'll lead to a stronger body of data for education leaders and decision makers. Section 6 provides a clarification needed to the data disaggregation statutes, or All Kids Count. If it first establishes that the disaggregated detailed ethnicities may be changed based on population growth determined by a 10-year cycle using the American Community Survey, and adds as soon as practicable in paragraph 2 to additional data filter requirements, which provides increased flexibility to the department to seek feedback from stakeholders. And to round out the article, section 7 strikes the word supplemental, and this was in the presentation from the American Indian Instruction Statute, in order to strengthen the language, history, and culture instruction in Minnesota schools. And Madam Chair, that completes Article 2, and I will pass it off to Assistant Commissioner Corte for Article 3.
Assistant Commissioner Corte.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Article 3 is about inclusive and welcoming schools. This section requires transmitted education records, including to include pupil withdrawal agreements and what the services the pupil needs to prevent inappropriate behavior from reoccurring. Section 2 adds permissive language stating a school may consider religious or cultural observances when setting their school calendar. And this proposal adds cultural observances in recognition of communities where other non-religious times may affect the school calendar. Section 3 prohibits any school in Minnesota from having a mascot that depicts or refers to American Indians without first going through a tribal consultation process. Section 4 codifies a definition for comprehensive school mental health systems. And Section 5 codifies a definition for multi-tiered systems of support, or MTSS. Section 6 defines in-school suspension, which is currently only reported for students in special education. The ISS, or in-school suspension ISS definition, is consistent with the civil rights data collection that is submitted to the U.S. Department of Education, and districts are already collecting this data. This will enable the state to have a more complete picture of in-school suspension data. And the section also modifies the definition of out-of-school suspension to one school day or more, and moves Minnesota a step closer to alignment with the civil rights data collection standards, which is at least one half day or more. Section 7 defines non-exclusionary disciplinary policies and practices as supports and services districts should provide prior to moving forward with an exclusionary dismissal. Section 8 defines a pupil withdrawal agreement. Section 9 updates the term alternative education services offered post-dismissal to non-exclusionary disciplinary policies and practices offered pre-dismissal, and also requires non-exclusionary discipline practices or non-exclusionary discipline policies and practices before pupil withdrawal proceedings, except where there is an immediate danger to self or others or property nearby. Section 10 clarifies that alternative education services must be implemented when a student is suspended for more than 5 consecutive school days. Section 11 requires school administrators to ensure that alternative education services are provided to pupils who are suspended for more than 5 days. Section 12 defines minimum education services to be provided to a suspended student, including the ability to complete assignments for full credit. Section 13 updates the term alternative education services to non-exclusionary disciplinary policies and practices, and these would be offered pre-dismissal as opposed to post-dismissal, and that a legal resources list for students facing discipline will be posted on MDE's website. Section 14 adds a number of permissive items to the admission or readmission plan, and updates the definition of suspension to align with changes in Section 6. Section 15 requires schools to report on pupil withdrawal agreements to MDE. Section 16 specifies that MDE's guidance includes direction on how to equitably engage stakeholders to revise discipline policies. It requires school districts to include non-exclusionary disciplinary policies and practices in their uniform criteria for dismissal. It also requires schools to continue reviewing a pupil's schoolwork after expulsion, exclusion, or pupil withdrawal agreements unless they enroll in another school district. And lastly, requires schools to provide a list of mental health and counseling services that are available to the student after expulsion. Section 17 prohibits school staff, including school resource officers, from using prone restraint on students. Section 18 requires school boards to annually review and revise their district's school discipline policies. And it also makes technical corrections that make the permissible reasons to remove a student from a classroom more reflective of community feedback. Section 19 clarifies the definition of American Indian student used to establish an American Indian Parent Advisory Committee. Section 20 adds language requiring that the majority of an American Indian Parent Advisory Committee must be made up of parents of American Indian children. Section 21 makes various changes to the statutory definition of the Director of American Indian Education within the Minnesota Department of Education. Section 22 protects American Indian students' right to wear tribal regalia or objects of cultural significance, such as eagle feathers, at graduation ceremonies. Section 23 makes statutory provisions regarding the use of restrictive procedures applicable to all children, not just students with disabilities. And Section 24 makes updates to restrictive procedures plans that schools maintain. An oversight committee must also look at the racial disproportionality of the use of restrictive procedures, among other indicators. And lastly, it also prohibits using a restrictive procedure on any child under the age of 5. I'll move on to Article 4, which is about health and wellness. This section requires schools to provide mental health instruction for students in grades 4 through 12. This has an effective date of July 1st of 2022. Section 2 requires schools to establish social-emotional learning standards in a developmentally appropriate way. And Section 3 requires the Commissioner of Education to develop and maintain resources to assist schools in implementing the requirements of Section 2. So with that, I will hand it back to Mr. Uney.
Mr. Uney.
Madam Chair, I'll start Article 5, which is teachers. In Section 1, this updates the definition section of the World's Best Workforce statute to include definitions of ethnic studies curriculum, rigorous, anti-racist, culturally sustaining, and institutional racism. This represents a lot of partnership that we've had with the Teachers of Color and American Indian Teachers Coalition around creating a culturally inclusive, sustaining teaching and learning environment. Section 2 requires district advisory committees Section 2 modifies the World's Best Workforce statute also by adding language to make schools more culturally responsive, inclusive, and respectful for students, families, and community. Section 3 requires district advisory committees to ensure that curriculum and learning and work environments in their districts are inclusive and respectful to all racial and ethnic groups. Section 4 sets the statewide goal for increasing the percentage of teachers and teachers of color and American Indian teachers at least 2 percentage points per year. It would require MDE and PELSB to jointly publish a report every other year detailing the progress on the strategies to achieve these goals, require PELSB and Office of Higher Education and MDE to publish a report on each of the programs administered with explicit purpose of increasing racial and ethnic diversity of the state's teacher workforce. Section 5 would require school districts and charters to adopt a policy prohibiting discrimination or discipline of a teacher for their incorporation of the contributions of any federally protected class of people into their curricula. Section 6 removes the prohibition of Tier 1 teachers from joining a bargaining unit. Section 7 requires teachers to complete a Minnesota teacher prep program, a state-approved program in another state, or licensure via portfolio to obtain a Tier 3 or Tier 4 teaching license. Section 8 removes the basic skills test from teacher licensure. Section 9 adds the early childhood family education and adult basic education teachers to the continuing contract protections and adds them to the continuing contract statute. Sections 10 and 11 require teachers to be evaluated on their cultural responsiveness as part of teacher development and evaluation. Section 12 would require principals to be evaluated on their cultural responsiveness as part of principal evaluation. And then Section 13 requires schools' long-term plans to include strategies to make schools culturally inclusive and respectful. And with that, I will pass it back to Assistant Commissioner Corte.
Assistant Commissioner Corte.
All right, so I am moving on to, Madam Chair, members, we will be moving on to Article 6, which is about charter schools. Section 1 of Article 6 defines charter management organizations, education management organizations, and online education service providers in the charter school statute. Section 2 requires that charter schools follow the municipal contracting law, the same law that school districts follow. Section 3 requires charter schools to comply with the Education for English Learners Act in the same way as we expect from all other public schools. Section 4 prohibits charter schools from using corporal punishment in the same way that is required for all other public schools. Section 5 modifies the term of a charter school authorizer. Section 6 clarifies that if an authorizer withdraws before the end of their five-year evaluation, that they are then not subject to an evaluation. Sections 7, 8, and 9 all require the charter school to provide a market need and demand analysis and information when it is submitting an application to an authorizer to open or expand a new school. Section 10 clarifies that charter schools must be free for any Minnesota student and that Minnesota students must have admission preference over out-of-state residents. Section 11 updates the definition of teachers for charter schools to more accurately reflect teachers that serve charter schools. And Section 12 clarifies that charter schools can only lease space that is owned by a lessor and cannot sublease from a sublessor of any building. Section 13 clarifies that an affiliated building company or ABC may only support a single school. Section 14 requires that a charter management organization or education management organization to submit annual audited financial statements to MDE. And lastly, Section 15 corrects an incorrect citation in Minnesota Statutes 124E.25. Moving on to Article 7, which is regarding nutrition and libraries, Section 1 requires participants in the National School Lunch and Breakfast Program to not deny a lunch or breakfast to a child due to an outstanding school meal balance. This section also defines respectful treatment under 124D11 and requires participants in the school lunch program to not demean or stigmatize any student participating in the school lunch program. Participants also must not limit a student's participation in any school activity due to an unpaid meal balance. And it also requires MDE to send a letter of noncompliance to participants that violate this requirement and requires the participants to respond within 60 days of receipt of the letter. Section 2 adds a definition of school library to statute. And section 3 is a technical fix to Minnesota statutes 134.34 to provide an accurate cross-reference for school library supports. With that, I'll hand it back to Mr. Uni.
Mr. Uni.
Madam Chair, thank you. And I promise that'll be the last handoff. We have the last three articles here, and then we'll be done with our walkthrough. Again, I appreciate the opportunity to provide this walkthrough. Article 8 is on early childhood. As you remember, this was changed slightly in the amendment. This section would add allo parents as eligible people to use use services under early childhood family education. That is Article 8. Article 9 is for post-secondary enrollment options and graduation. Section 1 prohibits post-secondary institutions from basing admission decisions on a student's race, color, creed, religion, national origin, sex, age, marital status, and status with regards to public assistance, sexual orientation, disability, or gender. Section 2 changes the statutory requirement for when a student has to inform their district or charter of their intent to enroll in a PSEO course for the following semester. And again, this section also reinstates stricken language at the beginning of that section that was inadvertently stricken during the drafting process. Section 3 reduces the withdrawal and absence periods to 10 days for when a student withdraws or is absent from a post-secondary institution course, which would then trigger the statutory requirement that the department must not submit payment to the institution for that course. Sections 4 and 5 remove obsolete and irrelevant language from the graduation incentive law. Section 6 is a repealer to remove irrelevant language around graduation outcomes reporting for students with emotional and behavioral disorders. And that completes Article 9. Article 10, or technical corrections. Section 1 adds language about the appeal process for when a K-12 certification request is denied and that appeal must be made to the Commissioner of Education. Section 2 adds language to streamline the process for MDE reporting on tax increment finance districts. Section 3 removes irrelevant language about MDE's no longer existing licensing division. Section 4 reorganizes Minnesota Statutes 120B.30 to make necessary consistency and cross-reference accuracy. And the final section of the bill repeals an irrelevant rule. And with that, Madam Chair, that concludes our walkthrough of the department's policy bill.
Thank you. So now we'll move on to public testimony. And again, I remind testifiers that we have up to 2 minutes for testimony. If you have more testimony, please feel free to submit that to our committee administrator, Laura Taken-Holtze, and we can get that added to members' packets. So first up, we have Melody Strong, and on deck, we'll have Sam Johnson.
Chair Richardson and committee members, thank you for the opportunity to testify on House File 950. My name is Melody Strong, and I'm an art teacher at Franklin Middle School in Minneapolis. Today, I'm representing Educators for Excellence, a teacher-led nonprofit with over 2,300 members across the state. Our members are united around a common purpose of providing an excellent and equitable education system that elevates the teaching profession. That's why E4E is excited to support provisions in the bill, including reducing unnecessary suspensions and expulsions through the use of non-exclusionary discipline policies and restorative practices. Additionally, we would urge committee members to consider the further restriction of suspensions on students in kindergarten through third grade. We also support setting a statewide goal for increasing the number of teachers of color and American Indian teachers. As a teacher of color myself, I have personally witnessed the positive impacts we have on students. My students have expressed how they yearn for teachers of color. I agree because I too wanted that as a young student. This is even more vital for rural areas like where I grew up. Adults of similar ethnicities, experiences, and backgrounds can offer the support students of color need to feel included and valued in our school setting, as well as successful in their academic career. It's never been more clear that we need a teaching workforce that better aligns with our state student population. However, E4E has concerns with provisions in the bill that restrict ways in which teachers can earn a Tier 3 license, which could stop teacher candidates who are like me from ever setting foot in a classroom. Nearly 20 years ago, I entered the teaching profession as a teaching artist and eventually under what was then called a community expert permission. Under Minnesota's new tiered licensure system, I currently have a Tier 2 license and I've worked over the past year to obtain my master's degree. In fact, I'll be eligible for a Tier 3 license shortly. Minnesota's current teacher licensure system has been one of the most positive changes to remove economic and access barriers to enter the profession. Already, 21% of both Tier 1 and Tier 3 licensures are held by teachers of color. We urge you not to change the conditions which would make teachers eligible for a Tier 3 license in this bill. If it weren't for alternative pathways similar to what is offered in our current system, I don't think I would be teaching. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify. We look forward to working with you, Madam Chair, and the committee members to advance these critical education policy initiatives this year.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Sam Johnson, and on deck, we have Glizelle Toledo. Sam Johnson.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Sam Johnson, and I'm a Tier 2 dance teacher and the director of the dance program at St. Paul Conservatory for Performing Artists. Thanks for having me. I also wanted to speak to the proposed changes to the licensure pathway for Tier 2 teachers to obtain Tier 3 licenses. In the dance department here at SPCPA, we intentionally have a really large faculty made up of teachers who are experts in what they teach. Dance is taught through the embodied histories of its practitioners. So in order to have a curriculum that supports a wide range of dance techniques taught in effective, culturally appropriate ways, we need to maintain a large faculty, a lot of part-time teachers as opposed to two or three full-time teachers. Most of our teachers hold either a Tier 1 or Tier 2 license and teach between 3 and 10 hours a week at SPCPA, while also teaching at many other institutions, including the University of Minnesota, McAllister College, the Cole Center, and other dance schools throughout the metro region. The elimination of the pathway for a Tier 2 to a Tier 3 license has the potential to weaken the teaching in our department. The time and financial burden will potentially push out teachers who've been teaching for many years and will be particularly burdensome for teachers in dance forms that have historically been underrepresented in higher education programs, often teachers of color. There are very few schools in our region that provide the kind of professional level dance training that we do in a public school setting, especially schools with full-time faculty positions. This limited availability of full-time positions further disincentivizes teachers from completing lengthy certification processes, contributing to a shortage of licensed dance teachers in our state. In my own case, I have a master's degree in dance and taught for many years in Minneapolis and around the country before coming to SPCPA 6 years ago. If I was required to attend a certification program or complete a lengthy portfolio for what is essentially a part-time position, I would choose to leave SPCPA and focus on teaching at other places. If the flexibility in licensure is diminished or eliminated, it will adversely affect the ability we have to provide the kind of rigorous, complex, expansive dance education that I believe best serves our students.
And I'm going to have to stop you right there because you're at 2 minutes. And if you have more, please feel free to submit it.
Okay, I'm all done.
Thank you. All right. Up next, we have Glizelle Toledo. And on deck, we have Julieta Cervantes. Glizelle Toledo.
Good afternoon. Sorry.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Glizelle Toledo and am the only math teacher of color in Intermediate School District 287. Today, I would like to speak in support of the provisions on anti-racism and cultural relevant curriculum in the governor's policy bill. It is important for students to see educators that look like them and in their curriculum. I grew up in California and entered kindergarten in 1979. My elementary school principal was a Black man, and my fifth grade teacher was a Filipina, just like me. One of the many things missing in my K-12 education was finding someone like me in my textbooks. I never realized how having teachers, staff, and leaders of color were important to me until I moved to an area that was a lot less diverse. The lack of diversity in curriculum and staff has continued to affect me to this day. Representatives Richardson, Frazier, Keeler, Hassan, surely you understand and can relate to the importance of seeing someone like yourself as leaders, especially in the classroom. unconscious bias towards people of color in our systems run rampant, making anti-racist education and culturally responsive teaching even more important. Teachers are assessed by an evaluation system that does not know how to support practices of cultural responsive teaching or teachers of color. This bill adds culturally responsive methodologies that will guide us to be more equitable racially and socially. We have failed to teach about injustices present in our history. We have failed to show students how communities of color have historically contributed to society successfully in our traditional classroom subjects. Our students deserve anti-racist and cultural relevant curriculum to recognize the existence and value of other identities and in themselves. I would not be here today if I did not have people in my life who recognized and supported anti-racist practices. Thank you for allowing me to speak. I will stay for questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Julieta Cervantes, and on deck, we have Angela Osuji.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Julieta Cervantes, and I'm a Poder Fellow with Unidos Minnesota and a member of the Ethnic Studies Coalition, here to speak in support of House File 950, and in particular, its Ethnic Studies provisions. While growing up in rural Minnesota, I was one of few children of color in the classroom. This continued through my years in the Minnesota public school system, and I never felt more separate from my culture and identity than when I would walk through the doors of my school. This experience was also reflected through those that taught me, as I did not meet an educator of color until I had entered college. But what if I hadn't made it to college? What if I had never had access to educators or curriculum that centered my community? I love learning. And though I thrived in my academics and am grateful for the strong foundation that my education did give me, I have always felt that our current education system was not meant for me or my peers. However, House File 950 gives me hope that my peers and our generations yet to come may have access to a more holistic representation of our history. The bill brings to light the importance of having our stories be centered in the education of all students. The ethnic studies provisions of this bill give clarity for the implementation of ethnic studies and a common understanding. The culturally relevant methodologies that accompany the curriculum and the emphasis of long-term planning in schools that include ethnic studies are critical. I truly believe that this is a great leap forward in ensuring that all our students feel their histories represented and included in our education system. I urge the committee to support this bill and all students, educators, and communities through ethnic studies. Educational institutions have had a legacy of diminishing the cultural power of our communities. So there is intention that unfortunate legacy will continue. I believe this bill is a step in the right direction and ask the committee to support. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak.
Thank you for your testimony today. Up next, we have Angela Osuji, and on deck, we have Kate Rosak. Angela Osuji, and please correct my pronunciation if that is incorrect.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Angela Osuji. I submitted a longer version of my testimony today, but this is my summary of what I needed to say in lieu of the time. So, Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Angela Osuji. My voice is here today as a president of the Minnesota Science Teachers Association. I'm a licensed physical science teacher with the Minneapolis Public Schools. I am also a member of the 2019 Science Standards Review Committee. The Minnesota Science Teachers Association fully supports the clarification of the graduation requirements in science. The amendment of this statute will clarify and agree with Minnesota Statute 120B.021, required academic standards, and 120B.02, educational expectations and graduation requirements for Minnesota students. The 2019 draft of the K-12 Minnesota Science Standards reflects the need for one credit each in life science, physical science, and earth science, earth and space sciences, and are intentionally aligned with the framework for K-12 science education that proposes a new approach to K-12 science for all. These standards are based on the most current best practice, research, and science content and pedagogy. All standards in physical, life, and air sciences are required. We must increase the pool of highly qualified licensed earth and space science teachers. The Minnesota Science Teachers Association supports the development and implementation of professional development programs to make this a reality. While we advocate for a wider access to CTE and agricultural education courses, these are often limited in the science content of their course offerings. This results in significant gaps in their science knowledge and skill development of our students. And these have direct equity access to all of the standards implications, as well as access to a highly qualified science teacher. In a dedicated earth science class, for example, all the required standards will be taught by teachers best prepared to teach them. The proposed credit equivalency amendment will not do justice to the quality teaching by extension, the learning of the standards. The best qualified teachers of the sciences are science teachers. All our students deserve the best education from the most prepared and qualified educators. The proposed changes will only dilute teacher quality and widen educational equity for all. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Kate Rosak, and on deck, we have Tom Brenner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. Is the sound okay?
Yes.
Oh, very good. Thank you, members of the committee and Madam Chair, for having me here to speak today. I am honored to follow Dr. Osuji and so many other great speakers. This has just been a great experience to hear you all speak today. Thank you. I speak today as on behalf of the Minnesota Earth Science Teachers Association. I'm a licensed 5'8 and 9'12 science teacher and a career in tech ed licensed teacher, and I live and work in Parent in Minneapolis. You might hear third grade finishing up behind me. I want to bring to you all the need for all of our students in Minnesota to have science education from science teachers. As a science teaching community, we are doing beautiful things. We uplift this need for more earth and space science licensed teachers, and we have programs ready this summer starting in Minnesota to educate and to license teachers in earth and space science. We are doing such great things in science teaching in Minnesota, y'all. The 2019 draft of the Minnesota Science Standards, they've asked us to revisit our approach to what, to how we teach, and these changes are making a difference for our students. They ask us to teach this interconnected depth, to focus our energies on student experience and phenomena. They are crystal clear in their call for one life, one physical, one earth science credit for minimum high school graduation. Our organization, the Minnesota Earth Science Teachers Association, fully supports this clarification of these graduation requirements in science, for all of Minnesota students. We support a strong CTE program, but this proposed credit equivalency won't do justice to Minnesota students.
30 seconds.
CTE is lovely, but it shouldn't replace a strong science education. Here in Minnesota, we love our land. We love our water. We love our climate. Our people deserve neighbors who understand how these have interacted since time immemorial, how our knowledge and our traditions help us to be these better humans living, eating, breathing, raising families here. Earth and space science is a relevant, quantitative science, and our state needs all students to have a rock solid understanding of it. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Tom Brenner, and on deck, we have Jason Luksic.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Tom Brenner. I'm the current principal of the Cloquet Middle School, and I'm on the executive committee of the Minnesota Association of Secondary School Principals. I want to start by saying that both my district and our principal organization are very concerned about the disparities between suspensions with our Black, Indigenous, and students of colors with our white students. We are thankful that non-exclusionary practices are a high priority of our legislators. However, I do have some concerns about the current bill and if it will achieve its desired outcomes. As an identified school district by MDHR, for our suspension practices, we have taken a close look at many of our systems that help perpetuate this problem and have implemented non-exclusionary practices like restorative practices and recovery rooms to help us move away from suspensions. This was all done with help from MDHR and dollars from our Achievement and Integration Grant. I share this with you because without the proper financial resources and needed professional development, I fear that we have not been able to tackle this problem and make the changes that we did. Finally, this problem is not binary and is very deeply systematic. I fear that just passing a bill like this will not stop exclusionary practices without proper professional development and money to support programs that work. My worst fear is that systems will find new and different ways to exclude students without these resources.
30 seconds.
I appreciate your time today. Appreciate your service. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Jason Luksic, and on deck, we have Tanya Lyon.
Madam Chair and committee members, thank you. My name is Jason Luksic. I'm a Lincoln Elementary principal in Bemidji, Minnesota, and I am a president-elect and a part of the executive committee of the Elementary Principals Association. I too have some concerns with the bill as far as suspension and exclusion. Bemidji was identified as a school through MDHR as disproportionate discipline. We have taken steps to resolve that, and we've been working very hard at the elementary level using a tiered process, basically tier one, looking at and including responsive classroom, peacemaker lessons, so we hired an outside consultant come in and provide some lessons with the teachers present so that they could have the appropriate staff development as well. And then the second step curriculum put into place. Responsibility-centered discipline has also been worked with staff development to as a tier one approach. So it's really a recipe of that goes together to make sure that those students can stay in school. And then we don't get to that suspension and expulsion piece. And the tier two part of this recipe is that we have a social worker with social groups in place, Indian Ed liaisons, and then our homeschool liaisons as well. And our tier three is that piece that is in the bill, the mental health, CTSS, the Children's Therapeutic Support Services. Putting that all together has allowed us to be very successful and reduce suspensions, but not taking away that opportunity for principals to have that authority to do make suspensions when needed. So we ask that you look at that and help us support moving forward in this as well. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Tanya Lyon, and on deck, we have Tom Apple.
Hi, my name is Tanya Lyon, and I am the Academic Standards and Talent Development Coordinator for Mankato Area Public Schools. In 2018, I was selected for the National Association of Gifted Children's Coordinator of the Year Award. I represent the Minnesota Educators of Gifted and Talented Organization. I am here on behalf of our organization to support equity in gifted and talented legislation and support the language in the bill before you. First, we support the change in language to include pro services. Families, teachers, and schools need this language to be more inclusive. As a district level administrator, I use both programs and services in my work, and both are especially important in a state that values local control of schools. Rural and smaller schools in particular need flexibility to provide services. Secondly, we support the inclusive language that expands services to more students who have historically been underserved by or left out of gifted and talented education. I have seen the positive and profound power of serving more gifted and talented students, including but not limited to students from low-income backgrounds, students of color, American Indian students, and special education students. All gifted and talented students need opportunities to learn, lead, and excel, and we need to open up those opportunities. Finally, we support how this legislative bill brings together assessment, identification, services, and programs. One national expert tells about his own grueling identification process that only led to an extra field trip per year. This story shows how assessments can identify students but mean nothing without services and programs. This bill changes that by bringing together assessment, identification, and services and programs. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Tom Apple, and on deck, we have Deb Hinton.
Thank you, Chair Richardson and committee members. My name is Tom Apple. I'm currently the Executive Director for the Minnesota Association of Agriculture Educators. I've been in this position for approximately 5 years. Prior to that, I have 37 years of teaching in a secondary setting, including 10 years as a science teacher teaching life science, earth science, biology, and general science. My concern that I'm addressing today is that with Article 1, Section 3, graduation requirements, I'm going to hesitate to speak specifically about terminology in there, but what I need to call your attention to is the fact that as I look at that section, there are three different instances where the number of credit requirements are either increasing or the elective credits are decreasing. Do keep that in mind as you look through those three sections. Why am I concerned about that? As an elective instructor through all of our programs, not just agriculture education, but CTE, we have to allow students to have access to those programs. And a one-size-fits-all curriculum with credit requirements simply takes away opportunities and flexibility for our students to access those courses. That's the overflight that I want to take a look at there. We have to leave it to local school boards, administrators, principals to run and design that. I would call your attention to the Minnesota Business Vitality Council. They met last year. I'm assuming a lot of you are familiar with it. The purpose was the Walt Flanagan administration founded this to go ahead and look at expanding CTE in our high schools. It was made up of MDE, Department of Ag, DEED, Office of Higher Education, Labor and Industry, Natural Resources, and MnDOT came out in July 2nd of last year. They identified the barriers for CTE education. Two of the critical barriers was the curriculum, and I quote, flexibility in fulfilling required credits, licensure, finance, school time, et cetera.
Time.
Point here is there's only so many hours that students...
I'm sorry, I'm going to have to cut you off here, Ms. Apple. We're at 2 minutes. Deb Hinton, you are up next, and on deck we have Melissa Mullen.
Good afternoon, Chair Richardson and members of the committee. My name is Deb Hinton, and I am the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. Thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony that is also supported by MREA, AMSD, MSBA, and C. For your reference, my comments are with regard to Article 5, Section 7 of the MDE policy bill that would eliminate the option to use 3 years of teaching experience with a positive evaluation each year under a Tier 2 license to fulfill the coursework requirement for a Tier 3 license. We are experiencing a severe teacher shortage in some licensure areas across the state, and we believe we would lose some excellent teachers and teachers of color if this change moves forward. The tiered licensure system has enabled professionals, especially those in the fields of career and technology education, to teach in our schools. These professionals have engaged in formal education for their chosen field and may have participated in apprenticeships and internships. Once hired, these teachers have been provided coaching by licensed teachers serving as instructional coaches, their principals, and in many cases have been assigned licensed teacher mentors. Tier 2 teachers usually attend the same school district professional development sessions as other licensed teachers. They are learning pedagogy on the job, and after 3 years have been evaluated by their supervisors. Tier 2 teachers build relationships and sometimes serve as much needed coaches and advisors for student activities. They enrich our schools and fill positions that in some cases would go unfilled, resulting in lost opportunities for our students.
30
seconds. Well, the credentials these teachers bring with them may allow students to earn industry-specific certifications. Public schools who hire these teachers are not trying to get around hiring a licensed teacher. I've heard many times from principals and superintendents that they've had positions go unfilled for years. I would add that while we do not support the change to the option of using 3 years teaching experience under a Tier 2 license to fulfill the coursework requirement to be eligible for a Tier 3 license, we do support the elimination of the basic skills examination for teacher licensure. Thank you for your consideration of this testimony.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Melissa Mullen. We have Adil Abdul on deck, and we are going to have to ask other testifiers. I know many have submitted also written testimony to please do that as well, as we do have some member questions that we have to get to as well. Melissa Mullen. Not hearing from Melissa, we
sorry.
Will move.
Yes, I'm here. Sorry.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Okay. Okay. Good afternoon, and thank you, Chair Richardson and Education Committee members, for the opportunity to speak to you all. I am Dr. Melissa Malin, Vice President of the Minnesota Council for the Gifted and Talented, or MCGT, which is popularly called. It is a 65-year-old nonprofit serving the gifted and talented children and their families. MCGT joins the Minnesota Department of Education in advocating for the following amendments to Section 4 of the Education Bill. The amendment changes the language from programs to programs and services, which recognizes the efforts of districts of all sizes and includes services to facilitate learning for all students, regardless of the advantage or disadvantage that exists for each student in education. The amendment also changes language to include requiring that assessments are equitable to all groups, and explicitly adds students of color, American Indians, and students with 504 plans. Many people on 504 plans have ADHD or mental health challenges, so that's very important. This has been added to the assessment language. Sensitivity to English language learners and low-income students had already been included in the language. The amendment also includes language stating that assessments and procedures must be coordinated to allow for optimal identification of programs and services for underrepresented groups and students. Okay, let's think about this. Equality refers to offering all students equal access to educational programs and services so they can achieve to their highest potential.
30 seconds.
However, something that we were talking about a lot during comments related to bill changes today is that equity refers to actively providing services and coordinated programs and services to all students, and especially to students who are underrepresented in gifted and talented ed. Services may include positive behavior interventions that replace suspensions, that teach restorative practice, social emotional learning support and skill development, and also support for implementing accommodations. The result of providing services that establish equity is a leveling of the playing field that facilitates equitable representation of all students in gifted and talented ed in a way that mirrors each group's representation in the population. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Adil Abdul, and then we will move on to member questions.
Thank you so much, Chair Richardson. Madam Chair, members, many thanks for the opportunity to testify today. Reading this legislation, you know, feels like deja vu. Governor Walz and Minnesota Department of Education have been saying school districts need to use non-exclusionary methods before kicking a child from his or her educational environment. The problem is that I'm not sure if they believe this and really want it. Here's why. I've been around the block, advocacy block, that is, for over a decade. And I know that what the governor wants, the governor gets, because he holds that ever-powerful veto pen. In other words, governors can negotiate what is important to them and their constituents passed and become law, but only if they really want it. However, this language, non-exclusionary suspensions in Section 7, Subdivision 12, lines 21.24 to 22.4, gives parents like me the illusion, but not the tangible action our kids need. For example, if Governor Walz really wanted this, then he should have made sure Education Minnesota supports this on the record, and his office would have also made sure that they communicated with the principals, as you've heard, who have concerns, and the administrators to get their support. In the end, perhaps no one would get everything they want, but everyone would get something they need. If I were a betting person, and I lived in Las Vegas, right, hot city, I would bet this language is going to be scrapped during the conference committee, and the governor and the state education department will blame the other side, thereby guaranteeing minority votes while doing nothing to ensure success of our kids was accomplished.
30 seconds.
I know, I'm sure I have irritated some of the politicians here, but please put yourself in my shoes, put yourself in so many students and families' shoes. Imagine testifying for the same bill, knowing while the seeds appear to be good, it will never produce fruitful fruits. Thank you for your time, as always.
Thank you for your testimony. Moving on to member questions, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to the testifiers. Most interesting. What's most shocking to me is that the Deputy Commissioner led off her presentation by not mentioning that we have a growing achievement gap and that student centers should be on the cognitive and the intellectual abilities of our students, not on anything else. If we take care of helping them with their cognitive abilities and their intellectual needs, all students will improve and students will get to the point where we don't have an achievement gap. So I'm just appalled that the Deputy Commissioner would lead off with her statement and not even talk about how important it is to focus on intellectual needs of our children. This bill is unfortunately a huge mandate that's going to crowd out any kind of local control at a time when we've had a pandemic and are continuing with the pandemic. We still don't have many of our students, or all of our students, I should say, back in the classroom. And the focus should be on what can we free up for our school districts and our charters so that they can accomplish, so teachers can accomplish using innovation ways to close this learning gap that has occurred. There are tighter controls on parental and student outcomes for educational programs. I can't believe that there's this huge control in this bill. As far as rigorous, defining rigorous as only meeting state standards, I think Commissioner Caselius would just be appalled if she read that definition, as we worked so hard to make sure that rigorous meant something that was achievable, but was really going to motivate our students. As far as welcoming and inclusive schools, how are we going to allow for protection of our teachers and staff if there are violent movements or attacks by our students? There's nothing in here that really protects the teacher. Or what form of physical holding or force on staff will be allowed to be used if there's violent behavior? We also know that many teachers have been, you know, many teachers may not have been disciplined for incorporating contributions from communities of color into curriculum. Why are we even making that statement when we've never heard that someone's been punished? And I'm so grateful for those two testifiers, Mr. Johnson and Ms. Strong, for mentioning the need for the tier one and for the tiered system to continue to evolve as we have designed it to work for getting teachers into our classrooms as they move from a tier one to a tier two and to a tier three. And finally, are the changes proposed in the Achievement and Integration Program aligned to the possible Cruz-Guzman lawsuit settlement? I want to know, Department, you know, have you considered that? Because if we adopt these changes, what impact will they have on the state's defense of this lawsuit? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Frazier.
Yes, I just want you to add a little bit to what Representative Erickson said. Again, to the testifiers, thank you for your testimony. You know, I always talk, when I talk about equity, you know, one of the reasons I decided to run for office and be here, and education is really important to me, and we have extreme disparities within this state. But we have extreme disparities. There are root cause issues for that extreme disparity. And what the testifiers were laying out were ways to get at some of those root causes. So I think, you know, I am for rigor. I agree with that, but I also think we have to equitably make sure that all of our students have access to those rigorous courses. But there are some root cause systemic issues that we have within our system that are causing our Black and Brown and Indigenous students to perform at horrendous disparate rates. Some of the worst in the country, some of the worst in the world. And if we don't start to address those root cause issues, we will never, ever close these gaps. So anytime we have individuals that are focusing on policies or laws that are gonna do that, I'm gonna support that. And I'm gonna be appalled anytime I have someone say anything that goes away from addressing those root cause issues in this state. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. Representative Hassan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I want to thank all the testifiers for all their testimony. For me, I'm trying to digest all of this and understand what this means for our students. And I am extremely concerned about our Black students and our ELL students. After, you know, the death of George Floyd and the civil unrest that followed and a pandemic that, you know, destroyed our economy and confined us in our homes and took away our students' social and emotional support, which was their schools. I am just like, my concern just is that we're not, this is not radical enough for me to say that we're tackling all the problems that exist today in our schools. And I was listening the whole time, knowing that our Black and Indigenous students are at the bottom of the feed when we talk about education achievement. Not once have I heard Black students or any specific program that will be focused on Black students and how are we going to close the achievement gap for Black students. So I don't know if that's a technical error from the department or if no one has, like, you know, came across that, but I would expect something much, much more than this from our department and the governor's office. We are at a racial reckoning here, and if we can't, if this is not the year we maybe attempt to close this disparity gap, it's never gonna happen. This is it. This is our moment, and this bill does not go far enough. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hassan. Not seeing any other member hands up at the moment. We have time for maybe an additional testifier. Paula Hansen. Not hearing from Paula Hansen. Caitlin Snyder.
Hi, Madam Chair. One moment, please. Madam Chair and members, my name is Caitlin Snyder with Education Minnesota. On behalf of our 89,000 members across the state, including education support professionals, teachers, school nurses, counselors, social workers, and psychologists, I'd like to speak in support of a number of provisions today. Article 5 makes a number of changes to bargaining and licensure. This bill would require that lifelong teachers have training and pedagogy to meet the needs of all students in their classrooms. Students have many different ways of learning, and teachers need to know how to meet their needs. This will not remove any teacher from the profession, but recognizes the need to provide more tools and professional development to newer teachers. This bill would allow Tier 1 teachers to voluntarily join the local bargaining unit. A Tier 1 license is tied to the district, a system with lopsided power dynamics. This will allow all teachers to negotiate together for the resources they need. This committee previously heard the changes in Section 9, Article 5, which adds early childhood family education and adult basic education teachers to the continuing contract law. This means ECFE and ABE teachers would have notice about whether or not they are returning next school year. School administrators adjust to enrollment challenges every year, including a potential 10% bump in their kindergarten or first grade classes next year, and I know they can meet this challenge. Education Minnesota proudly supports the non-exclusionary disciplinary policies and practices in this bill. In the interest of time, I would direct your attention to the written testimony from Solutions Not Suspensions Coalition and Legal Aid, and would simply note how discipline disparities harm our Black students and Indigenous students in particular. Because of these inequities and others, we support the racial equity language throughout the bill that a number of testifiers spoke to so eloquently earlier. Thank you for your time today, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you for your testimony. For those who did not get an opportunity to testify today, as we're coming up on time, we will reach out to you and ensure that your written testimony is submitted to members as well. I will now lay over House File 950 for possible inclusion in the omnibus, and there being no further business before the committee, we are adjourned.